Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Meth Lab Radio. I am one half of your host, Frankie Metro, and unfortunately, it looks like I'm the dumber half because when I previously set the time for the show, I actually set it for next week, and I sent Mr. Nuwamba Flamingo, who is in China right now, a message stating that the show was next week. So there's a possibility that Nuwamba Flamingo may not actually make an appearance tonight. And it is a possibility. However, Nuwamba Flamingo is always here in spirit. And, you know, we'll hold things down for him. While we do that, I did want to go ahead and mention to everybody that, of course, if you would like to read Nuwamba Flamingo, you could at any time at methlab, 1234.blogspot.com. I.e. the Meth Lab, where he's the main operator. So it's good stuff there. Definitely check it out. In fact, he has a new series up right now called Ass Raped by a Crazy Poetry Bitch. Actually, 5 segments of that. So I highly suggest it. It's definitely a Sunday read. You know, it's something that you might want to sit on your porch and drink lemonade with, or you could sit at a bar somewhere drinking Guinness and Irish car bombs and laughing at stupid shit like that. You can do that kind of stuff. Read Nuwamba Flamingo. Yeah, that's always good things. Or what I could do is I could actually read you guys a poem that I recently received from Mr. Nuwamba Flamingo. And this poem is called America. America, I don't know you anymore. America, I don't owe you anymore. Done spent my socialized security, done shit in my hand, done wore a trench coat, and sucked off a zombie near my grave. Done force-fed my prison break with your prescription drug commercialized healthcare reforms. Got your reform schools basking in the Indian summer of Israel prisons. Got your hind legs kicked up, pissing blood on the Ninth Ward, sending your vampires on crusades, sending your STDs to Iran. Got your drone attacks, panic attacks, ADD, Ginsbergian werewolves, Newt Gingrich's masturbating to 3-titty movie stars. Got your epileptic Mormons on pogo sticks, stomping on Mitt Romney's dog, plotting killing sprees, amputees and MTV pay-per-view abortions. Got your football games, ladyboys with steroid penises, Roger Clemens naked on somebody's front lawn. America, Bigfoot is real. America, Bigfoot telling yo mama jokes. America got yo 10 million children left behind, obesity machines for food poisoning, diarrhea, rainbows, and Ouija boards for air traffic controllers. Got your retarded cosmic hitchhikers pushing gangbangers in wheelchairs down escalators. Got your IRS audits, proctology, 3 a.m. robocalls asking, when was the last time you had anal sex with your mother? America got your UFO abductees, Santa Ana winds, Elvis's ghost, and his fetus suit cooked in a plastic vagina. Got your Tibetan monks aerobics in the Potala Palace, Mexican corpses, desert sun, tornado bait, Facebook-addicted androids with mohawks shedding crocodile tears, mock outrage for the school shooting. Got your profitable prisons, food stamps, foreclosures, random rapists roaming the streets of Baltimore with clipboards and 3-piece suits, with stolen kidneys and demons in the church, with televised telepathy and jorts and unkosher sacrifices to Walmart's wigger gods. Got your narcissistic rendering, suicide bombers seeking Ambien, faggot Republicans seeking payphones in abandoned subways, quoting scripture in airport bathrooms. Got your text messages from the uterus of tomorrow pledging allegiance to an idealistic want, like Thomas Jefferson fucking his slaves, like George Washington's teeth, like sperm on a blue dress, like spit on George Bush's pretzel. America, one nation, under God, under chopsticks, under televised flags on coffins. America with its pubic hair on fire. America with its liberty and crucified dragon testicles. Now I'm on the outside looking in. It's a one-way mirror. I think I'm a foreigner, and I think I'm a foreigner because, America, I don't know you anymore, and I don't owe you anymore. And that was America by Mr. Nuwamba Flamingo. You guys should definitely check him out if you don't know Nuwamba Flamingo by now. Obviously, you've been hiding under a rock somewhere. Really, really heavy poem there, man. Of course, if you guys want to call in and read some stuff, this is an open mic session. Please feel free. A number to call in is 805-856-2808. Man, I'm really upset. I think I really did fuck up, man. I really wanted Nuwamba to read that piece, to be honest with you, because I think he would have done it a lot better justice than what I have. But since I am a meth lab chemist myself, I think I'll read this little section here. This is actually from something that will be soon to be released by the Literary Underground, Citizens for Decent Literature, and what have you. This is a little subsection from The Great Acid Search for the Long-Winded Essay on Infinity. He reads it over the shoddy Skype connection we share. It's a signal that we work around. He's in the far east corner of Asia. I'm on the east side of the Southwest Mountains. Part of me thinks of him as a sadistic mindfuck. He knows I want the book, and he knows I don't usually pay for books. If I can't steal it, or if it's not free, then why bother? I firmly believe in the philosophy that all things worth learning are worth stealing or worth giving away. I think that's where we differ, because Minus Franco loves stealing anything, gives very little away, especially when it comes into matters of identity or personality, things he knows is both chaotic and separate entities, believes that as long as you're breathing, you're learning no matter who's talking, and fuck what they're talking about. But he reads. He's read more than myself, and he says that sometimes I read too much into things. He should know. He speaks four different languages. He speaks Dutch, German, Hebrew, Mandarin, on top of English. He probably knows more Spanish than I do, and lives in Mongolia, for fuck's sake. Minus says I read too much into certain situations, but I don't read enough DFW because I've never read him. He mocks me over a shitty Skype connection by reading from The Infinite Jest, in between anecdotes involving Thai hookers and broken condoms, in between long narratives about Anton LaVey's brief stint in music, and Tibetan vacations where Chinese was always dictated in bigger print. Have you ever listened to Satan Takes a Holiday, he asks, and I catch the word Satan and holiday when he names the title, and I respond that I haven't heard this song. Neither has anyone here, Mang. None of my students, none of the teachers, none of the hookers. I'm telling you, Satan doesn't exist here. There's too many souls to count. Do you ever get worried when asking people about the devil and shit like that? I only do it when I feel I have to. Otherwise, you know what? You probably shouldn't be talking about this shit over Skype. Minus and I agree to save the rest of the conversation for an email down the road. He reads instead, and he reads out loud. And he doesn't start from the beginning like he knows I would prefer, but instead opens to page 186 and takes off, spitting into his damaged headset the whole way through. He has an arrival routine where he skips the front entrances and comes in through the south side's acoustic meters and gets a millennial fizzy out of the vending machine and the cephanoid sinist. Past the Tech Talks daily CD-ROM student papers production floor and the sick chemical smell of the read-only cartridges press developer. Past the heavier door to the tiled lattice of hallways to the squash and racquetball courts and one volleyball court and the airy corpus callosum of 24 high-ceiling tennis courts endowed by an MIT alumni and now so little used they don't even know where the nets are. The engineer flicks a lever and pumps the music up the coaxial medulla and through the amps and boosters packed into the crawl spaces above the high fall ceiling of the corpus callosum's idle tennis courts and up and out the aerial that protrudes from the gray and bulbous surface of the union's roof. There's a reflective 5 seconds of pause over the line. Minus asked me what I got from his selection from The Infinite Jest. It's a complicated scene in the book, and when he reads what Madame Psychosis, the main character of page 186 to 187, reads on air to select listeners of her program at 60 minutes more or less with Madame Psychosis, it reminds me of my own internet radio show. Minus has heard the program and is not that impressed, so he diverts the attention back to the discussion at hand, the book. Page 186 through 187. Is that all you got from that? Well, I don't have it in front of me. This is something I have chastised Panifesto in the past for saying, and I know I'm a hypocrite as soon as it leaves my mouth, but I will say that the description of the passageways the engineer takes on to reach his little oasis on the roof was very intriguing. How so? Minus asks. Well, take, for instance, when David Foster Wallace describes the underused tennis courts as an airy corpus callosum. I mean, right there, that's a huge metaphor for the Eutherian brain. Corpus callosum is what but a bunch of neural fibers that connect the right and left hemisphere of the brain, and these desolate nets are left to oblivion where MIT alumni once played. I'm sure you've heard the Agnom think tank, and that usually applies to schools like MIT or West Point, maybe. Hell, at the very least, it applies to the CIA. Well, Menius and I share a good laugh before he makes the analysis that the section in question is more about presenting the school infield tennis academy as a metaphor for the human body. It reminds me that I should not leave out the other vital organs that make us who we are, and that the brain cannot survive and operate properly without all parts intact. Once again, I'm reading too much into a situation and not seeing the picture right in front of my face. Meenu says Madame Psychosis reminds him of this chick he knew while living in Jerusalem. She never had her own radio show, but man, she was so whack she should have. I mean, unless I say it's okay to sleep with a machete under your pillow while you're staying at my apartment, you should be courteous enough to ask before I find it on accident the next morning. And that's the end of that. So, I love all the submissions that we've been getting for the Meth Lab the last couple of months. You guys may have actually checked out some of the stuff that's been going on. As of 2012, I believe our first actually publication was by Miss April Michelle Bratton. Really great series of poems there. So you guys should definitely go by there and check that out. As well as Carl Kowalski's new piece is up as well, so you definitely need to check that one out. Really good stuff. Completely fictional, of course. I will go ahead and put out that disclaimer. It is a fiction piece. Carl Kowalski is known for not pulling any punches, and he certainly didn't pull any this time around. So please, anybody that reads this, feel free to, you know, if you feel like you need to get offended, then by all means get offended. But I just hope that you take into account it is fiction. So let's not take ourselves too seriously. That being said, I'm going to read, this is a little selection from Mr. Carl Kowalski that was published on February 7th of 2012. This is actually, this is a feature on the Meth Lab called Transvestic Disassociation, featuring Carl Kowalski. This is actually two poems. The first one is Suriname. Nam hit the factory like a payload of napalm, setting libidos aflame and scorching the jungle of conflicted marriages with the incendiary heat of sexual fantasy. Nam emerged from the office citadel, the clean linoleum oasis populated with computers and polo shirts for men with machine grease on their hands were disavowed and unallowed inside. Nam collected paperwork from the shop floor, her hair black as the smoke of burning tires, denim tight as a falcon's hood, eyes alive with the hope of rescue, as she moved with the speed of shadow. Nam fell in love with the working man, his sinewy arms, leopard-spotted with chrome, ambivalent eyes, always distrustful, entering a battle of wills with no measure of victory available. Nam destroys every man, eventually succumbing to sexual battery, emotional confusion, financial chaos, an Armageddon of broken promises, the best time of their lives. And the second poem is actually entitled Dishrag Pathos by Carl Kowalski. Only a poet can make death seem poetic. Only a bad poet can transform a dead internet mistress into an immortal muse, wringing dishrag pathos from dirty cyber laundry, awaiting applause from lonely Facebook identities and Skype pussy, whispering secondhand platitudes from the mall of obscurity. He claims originality offering only superficial nihility, skin-deep nihilism, and unintentional parody. His mouth is a bukkake of better writers' poetic ejaculations. He wipes his lips on the small press dish rag and demands you call it genius. And I do want to say that I think the most disturbing part of that particular poem was the fact that he called it small press. Anybody knows that a black writer is not going to have a small press. No, I'm just kidding there. No. Carl Kowalski, I appreciate that poem, man. And, of course, if you guys would like to catch some more Carl Kowalski on the Meth Lab, please feel free. It is the newest addition to the Meth Lab. The month of May is actually a prose piece. Really, really good stuff. So please check that out. I am actually going to take a look and see I will go ahead and see that we have around 46 minutes left, about 45 minutes left of live streaming. That being said, I do see that we have a caller on the line, which is a 724. I believe that is Miss Lynn Alexander, so I'm going to bring Miss Lynn Alexander in because I know she has some questions for Nuwamba Flamingo. And unfortunately, Lynn, it looks like I fucked up big time, so you won't be able to ask him those questions as of tonight. What questions would you like to ask him as a matter of curiosity?
Well, you know what? I think that I will wait until I actually have him on because, you know, I don't want to tip him off to the subject matter, you know, to the scope of the inquiry. Yeah.
I will say... Yes, yes, please.
It does relate to goats, violation, and, you know, detachable appendages.
No, we don't need to talk about that. We don't need to talk about any of that. We don't need to talk about goats and no. Mm-mm. No dragon penises.
Wings.
Yes, dragon
wings. Disturbing wings.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a very disturbing story, and I did want to go on record in saying that Nuwamba Flamingo is a son of a bitch for writing that and sending it to Modus Operandi and then getting me to read it live in front of a crowd in Portland. And get the kind of reaction that I did from that crowd after reading that story.
Was that what you read when you had that experience? I didn't know that that it was about that story.
That was exactly what caused the dilemma in Portland in front of Stephen Perky and all his friends. It was exactly
I'm surprised because I don't know him, but just what I've observed about him, it seems like he and the people he sort of would hang around with would be kind of, I don't know, open-minded and would be sort of down with that. Yeah, like he seems like I mean, he published it. He put it in there. I mean, so it seems like that would, I don't know, I'm surprised.
I was horribly surprised, as a matter of fact. I've never been heckled so bad in my entire life. And
maybe they heckle everybody that way. Maybe they're
Everybody else got standing ovations and what have you. Encores and my story the story about me, Mr. Nuwamba Flamingo, did not go over so well. Yeah, you know, Not everybody's a goat lover.
No, certainly not to that degree either. I mean, I love goats, but I don't appreciate them in that particular manner. I'm not excited by them. You know, I'm not, you know, the thought of them, you know, it's not it doesn't do it for me. Livestock in general, you know, I've just never taken that opportunity. It's a little difficult, you know, for a female, I think. I don't know. Maybe the logistics are a little bit more challenging.
You know,
but
what?
Yeah, I mean,
I might actually challenge Miss Misty Rainwater Lights to read that story in Oakland or something along that line. Or maybe even Miss Lindsay Thomas. I'll get her to read it in Albuquerque. How about that? Yeah, I like that idea. I might get them to read that.
I'm a transsexual Korean midget karaoke singer. I'm not going to read that story.
Oh. Well, there you go. You heard that, right?
We heard, I think that we heard much of it. I heard Korean midget karaoke.
Transsexual.
Okay. Yeah, I missed that part.
Open-minded transsexual midget karaoke singer.
Open-minded. That's the important part.
Right.
That's the important part.
The important part.
It is. It really is, Lynn. And, you know, speaking of which, since you're on here, I wanted to get your reaction to one of Nuwamba Flamingo's latest installments to the Meth Lab. And I was going to read this and then get your analysis of it, if that was okay with you.
One that appeared right immediately before Koeski's,
the
poet rape something or other. Yeah, I think I know the story you're talking about.
Yes.
Well, you know what? I know that many people will roll their eyes and say, oh, she's like that. I'm not a big fan of sort of rape as an element in stories and fiction and humor. You know, it doesn't mean, not to say that I'm like a wet blanket and I don't laugh about anything, but for some reason, you know, it doesn't really, I don't know. I don't know what it is.
I think this was more willing. Like, I've always heard the expression, you can't rape the willing. And I like to think that Nwamba was sort of willing in this this experiment to gain some sort of, I don't know, insight into the world of being ass-raped by a crazy poetry bitch. That being said,
right, maybe so. Maybe so.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm not trying to, you know, get onto like a political correctness tear. I'm just saying that, you know, he seems to have a little bit of a fixation going lately.
Oh yeah.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know him well enough to know if that's a recent manifestation.
Oh no, it's not. That's been.
Yeah.
A,
I mean, it seems. Yeah, but as long as I've been, you know, he's been. I guess you could say in my radar. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, it seems to be a theme, and yeah, I mean, I don't know, but you know what? The thing is that I guess if you can't say it in fiction and you can't say it in your work, I mean, you know, that's that you have to be uninhibited and I guess let it hang out, whatever's on your, you know, going through your head, you know. So, you know, I'm not judging it. I'm just saying that it's kind of, it's not my thing.
Well,
you know?
I'll tell you what, Lynn. Let's give our listeners a chance to judge it. And I'm going to read a selection, and then I want your analysis of this particular selection, of course. You seem like a very intuitive person. This is Ass Raped by a Crazy Boat, excuse me, Poetry Bitch, Part 2. By Nwamba Flamingo. I had never seen propositions so directly before and had a hard time mustering words to respond to her requests. Plus, I was already a tad drunk by this point, and next thing I knew, though, she grabbed me by the arm and flung me out of my seat and dragged me out of the pub into the pouring rain. The door shut behind us, I could see Scooby and her cheerleader friend laughing and pointing at me in stitches at the whole situation. "Think you might want to put on some shoes," I pointed out, nothing her bare feet sloshing through the dirty brown puddles lining the Manchester streets as we made our way to who knows where. "The ancient Macedonians didn't need shoes, did they?" she snapped back at me. Didn't bother to mention that they probably at least had sandals or something. She continued to pull me down the street, still by my arm, until we reached a hot pink smart car which had a pretty good gash on its tiny hood. "Hurrah!" she shrieked in a retard-like howl upon witnessing the damage. She opened up the driver's side door for a split second and subsequently slammed it. Apparently, she didn't bother to lock her doors. It was a smart car, after all. I guess if someone wanted to steal it, they could just pick it up and carry it away. She then shoved me into the car and walked backwards in a circle around the car, keeping an eye on me and pointing at the sky the whole time. After yelling some curse words at a random pedestrian, she got inside the vehicle, pulled out a screwdriver from the glove compartment, jammed it into the ignition, and ground the engine to a start. I was starting to think that maybe she'd stolen the car, which she may have, but it also occurred to me that she might not be the type of person who could handle the responsibility of carrying around a car key. Maybe the screwdriver was easier for her. She peeled out and drove only a block up the street and parked the car in the middle of the sidewalk, knocking over a couple trash cans and scattering a few stray cats. Getting out of the car, she pulled me out, carjacker style, threw me over her shoulder, and carried me up 4 flights of stairs up to her flat, which wasn't locked either. Her flat was tiny, and I mean tiny. Only a small room with a kitchenette in the back. The once white paint on the room's walls was moldy and peeling, and the whole place reeked like an unhealthy concoction of sandalwood incense, Chinese food, and old shoes. Funny enough, though, it had an enormous red velvet couch, which practically took up the whole room. The poetry lady flung me down on the couch, pointed at me with an agitated expression, and disappeared into the bathroom. Looking around her flat, I noticed there was a huge ball of hash on a coffee table adjacent to the couch, next to a large glass crack pipe, which was lying on the floor. Not wanting to let the hash go to waste, I picked it up and packed a fat wad in the pipe, took a few hits, and was a bit shocked when I realized the floor was covered, practically flooded, with books, all types of books, from Agatha Christie, Chinese poetry in Chinese, Kurt Vonnegut, even Dr. Phil. Guess I didn't figure her for that much of a reader. A couple minutes later, the poetry lady emerged completely naked, except for a massive strap-on dildo and a long silver hunting rifle. And that's all of part two. That's scary, I have to say. I was immediately frightened by the ending of part two because I knew what was awaiting in part three. Lynn Alexander, when you hear things about how this crazy poetry bitch picked up Nuwamba Flamingo carjacker style and carried him up four flights of stairs only to emerge completely naked with a massive strap-on and a long silver hunting rifle, what goes through your mind at that point?
The first thing, I mean, I don't relate to, like, footwear choices, you know, influenced by the Macedonians. I mean, that was hard. I want to say that you could take it as a metaphor, which I really think was the spirit of the thing, you know. I'll leave it at that. I mean, that's the way I took it. I mean, that's wrong, and I'm always wrong, but I did take it as, sort of the sense of being seized, the sense of being helpless, powerless, at the mercy, if you will, at times of, that drive to create things. I didn't really take it, you know, at the time as completely literal. And I don't know, maybe I'm reading too much into it.
I like your interpretation because it makes me feel a little bit more safe about this, about what this piece has done to me. It traumatized me, Lynn, and I'm not afraid to admit it. It was a traumatizing experience for me, reading this. And I've met quite a few crazy poets in my day. I've met some crazy poets. Although I have to say that I've never met one as extreme as Mr. Nuwamba Flamingo has depicted in this story. And I thank God every day that I haven't. I really do.
Right. I think there's also a difference between, I mean, like I said earlier, I said, you know, sometimes I'm a little bit funny about, you know, the rape element. You know, it really depends on how it's used and the motivation and the intention and, you know, execution, all of that stuff. But, I mean, I will say that there's, I think sometimes when it's for some people, it's not, I don't want to say a fantasy or a fetish with it, but you know, when it's not meant, I don't think to like be demeaning of victims or anything, but I do think that there is something exciting to some people about the idea of, sort of being, not violated, but, you know, to be subservient and powerless, you know, that is a fantasy that a lot of people have. And you have to kind of wonder, why do so many people have that common fantasy? I mean, some people, you know, go as far as acting it out. I mean, why? What is it about, you know, submission, I guess, that speaks to us? I think, I don't know, maybe we want to be
You think broken that maybe down. There's a... Do you think that there's maybe an underlining, you think that there's maybe like an underlining element to this particular piece, and maybe, quite possibly, Mr. Nuwamba Flamingo would like to be in a subservient role with a crazy poetry bitch? I think that's a possibility.
Maybe. Or maybe, you know what, sometimes people just, you know, honestly, sometimes people just write things that have, you know, parts that are just, you know, to be shocking and, you know... Mm-hmm. To be sort of that brutalism to just kind of be raw and let it, you know, let it be crazy. So
I like to think that, like, you know, I'm not going to sit here and judge whether or not Mr. Nuwamba Flamingo wants to be subservient or no or what have you. I like to nurture it, and I like to nurture his creativity, and I'm going to do my best to do that, and Sky rocks. But he's not here. And unfortunately, that's my fault. And you know what we're going to have to do is I will go ahead and announce that next week we will have a return of the Meth Lab Radio Show. Same time, same channel. And this time we will have New Orleans Flamingo on. And we'll promise that.
And I think you make a good point that you have to really keep that distinction intact between, you know, the person and their fiction and their expression, and that, you know, I mean, who we are is not necessarily represented in what we write. I mean, you know, it doesn't, maybe he has that fantasy, maybe he doesn't. I mean, I'm not certainly not accusing him of that, but what I'm saying is that there is something sort of universal about, you know, people I think do think about it. It's you know, it's a theme for a lot of people and a desire for a lot of people and something people do fantasize about. So I guess I'm saying that, you know, there's something about us, humanity as people, that something about that, you know, subservience maybe, I don't know, excites us. I'm not saying him in particular because I realize he's, you know, he's apart from his writing.
Yes.
So,
Iwamba has a strange habit of being abducted by aliens a lot of times. So, a lot of his actions, a lot of his words, you can't really call it his own. Sometimes, I mean, he is probed quite a bit, and that stuff can have, you know, dire effects on a person's psyche. And a person's grasp of what's going on around them. Thankfully, it's come out as creative as it has with Mr. Flamingo, so I appreciate the fuck out of that. Lynn, since you are on the line, and we do have 29 minutes left of live streaming, I was wondering, since it is an open mic show, if you wouldn't mind sharing something.
Okay. Let me see. Well, you know, I'm very happy that Michelle has sent out her most recent Citizens for Decent Literature. As you know, she does both a print and an online version. She does a very good job with putting that together with her selections, with just the whole, and the concept, you know. I kind of dig the concept. So, you know, this is something that I sent to her for whatever reason. Nobody knows. So I guess, yeah, why not? And this is Essential Impetus, Frankie Metro. So I guess I will do that. Let me see. I actually have to put my glasses on because I'm old and it's like 1:30
in the morning.
Don't
start with that old stuff.
Oh, my God.
Don't
even start with that old stuff. I know. I just talk about ruining the vibe, man.
Oh.
Yeah, no. I suck. Well, anyway, so this is Essential Impetus. Rebellion makes its way through every age, heirloom, token, seed, under siege, when we again are struck, plucked from other to the crux of coil. Something in the span endures, in the force of conversation, they cloister to the spin, pocked the ebb within, their feral need for reaching. These rip mother from the genes, they wrap mathematics around the planet, cold the codex, cold the balance, still we cannot make a mountain in that gathering of shore. Thank you.
Wow. Wow. That was really good. I dug the mathematics around the planet line there. That was excellent.
You're right.
Yeah. That's really good stuff, man. We will go ahead and say that we have tried many occasions to encourage Miss Lynn Alexander to submit to the Meth Lab. However, like... some other people like Miss Alethea Drimmer. Yeah, I'm calling you out, Alethea Drimmer. They feel like they're not gutter punk enough for certain magazines like Motorstopper and I. Oh, I'm
wasn't
sorry.
Wasn't she just in Gutter Eloquence, though?
Yeah.
With,
Divine Mess.
I call that out because I think she should. I mean, I love Gutter Eloquence, I mean, but I'm just saying that, you know, this whole idea of somebody not having, you know, having the, what? The cred?
I think we like to think of it as a moral ineptitude here at the Meth Lab. We like to think of it as being completely devoid of any sort of morality whatsoever. And I'm sure that everybody is capable of that. I think we're all human, And I think as human beings, we are all capable of that. So.
Well, I don't think that we have to put ourselves in boxes. You know, I really dislike that idea, you know, where people say, oh, well, I'm not that kind of person. I mean, I don't sit around writing about, like, cocks all the time and stuff, you know. I mean, I don't do that. You know, and you know, I don't agree with the poetry high horse at all. I really don't. I mean, there are times where, we're in the gutter and we're filthy and we're, you know,
yeah.
We're nasty, you know, and if that's the truth of who you are and where you are at the time and that's what you're writing and throwing down, then you know what? Do it. Because to not do that makes you a fraud. It makes you bullshit. And you know, I think if that's what is coming out of you at that time, that's what you should let go, you know, and unleash it if you need to. But, you know, this whole... You know, yeah. So sometimes we write about pretty rivers and sunsets, and sometimes we write about, you know.
I try to avoid those pretty rivers and sunsets as much as possible. So, I don't know, but yeah. No, I hear what you're saying, man. You shouldn't, like, confine yourselves to a box or what have you. And if you do, then you're just doing yourself a disservice, you know, honestly, because I think, you know, the greatest thing about being a writer is being able to have range. I think it's very important
Absolutely.
To have range. You know,
and not put yourself in the position of saying, you know, oh well, I don't get political. Well, I don't get sexual. Well, I don't get into, you know. I mean, there are some of us, honestly, for different reasons, that do have a certain amount of restraint. I mean, there are people that are, you know, moms with kids that, you know, don't want their kids Googling. There are people that are in custody arguments right now. There are people that have jobs that, you know, they'd be out on the street if they lost them, and they can't afford to take those risks. And I think we have to respect and understand that, too, that not everyone can, you know, feel free to put everything out there on their own terms. I mean, I think that fear is very real. However, you know, but I don't thumb my nose at the gutter thing. I know better, you know.
Yeah. And you know what, Alicia Drummer, you should know better. You know better.
No, I don't mean that she doesn't know better. No, what I'm saying is the opposite. I'm saying that I don't think she's a stranger to submitting to things like that, and I don't think she's a stranger to writing things like that. I mean, I'm saying the opposite. I think she does know that. You know, there are times where, you know, hey, that's where you're at, and that's cool. You know, I think that she does have a range, and so I'm more talking about the people that that would never write something like that. I mean, I think she would. That's cool. I mean, I don't mean her. I mean the opposite. I mean, I'm saying that there are people that are, you know.
Well,
I'm going
to call her out until she submits.
Something wrong with it. There's nothing wrong with it.
No, I'm going to call her out until she submits something. No, yeah. Straight up. Yeah. Wow. I'm just looking through some of the comments here on at the Meth Lab. You guys can go to methlab1234.blogspot.com. So one of the things I love about the Meth Lab is we get all range of comments. From stuff that people tell us how much they enjoy the work to people telling us how much they hate it. And this is actually a comment posted on Misty Rainwater Light's three poems that were recently added in September of 2011, which, wow, I mean, for the majority, it's really good stuff. Like, a lot of people liked it. And then here, at the very bottom, on December 25th at 12:52 p.m., somebody took the time to read this on Christmas. An anonymous person actually said, "I threw up in my mouth a little. Gross." I love that kind of stuff. We made somebody throw up in their mouth on Christmas, Lynn Alexander. That's what we did.
See that? You know what? That's, hey, it's a reaction. It's,
yes.
You know, it's a strong reaction.
It is a very strong reaction. And the fact that we can affect someone's holiday like that, it just makes it that much more enjoyable for us. I am going to actually read this poem by Misty Rainwater Lights, one of my favorite female poets out there right now. And this is actually called Dead Like Bacon. Most of the marriages around me are dead, like chewy, not crispy bacon. And I'm not talking about the bacon you put in the goddamn microwave. I'm talking serious, old school, skillet sizzling, thick slab, real pork, not turkey bacon here. Marriages are dead and not fertilizing much of anything. Take Mark, his wife is beautiful, the stuff of mythology, and I'm not talking about Medusa or Baba fucking Yaga. I'm talking Betty Boop, but with a smaller head. Mark's wife is one bodacious bitch, but his hands were all over my thighs as the three of us looked up at the stars from the bed of my truck, and she was too spaced out on pineapple wine coolers to notice. When it comes time to find a lost jean jacket, man, get better about it soon. Though bring up shit that has been stewing in the pot since 1989 when Vanilla Ice was all the rage and people were talking about all the fun kinds of condom that could be had for free if you were ballsy enough to grab them for the basket. Women, petty creatures that we are, get bitter about much lesser things. I love that poem, man. Love that shit. What did you think about that poem, Miss Lynn Alexander?
Now that's by Misty, right? I'm looking.
Yes.
I actually have your page because I'm.
Oh,
I'm
see you in Pennsylvania here. I actually see you on the map. I see you there.
Oh, do you?
Yep. Yep. I see you there.
That's funny. You know, yeah. It's sort of like in real time. Yeah. No, you know what? I love Misty's work. I mean, I really do. I think she's. Yeah. I mean, I think that what appeals to me about it is that. There's a lot of times there's sort of this like mundane sort of household feel to it with this like layer of real, you know, just you can feel like this intense sadness behind a lot of it. At least I, you know, when I read it, that's what strikes me is, you know, this sort of like layer of the ordinary and then, you know, but like this extraordinary, you know, sadness that it's I don't think a lot of people can relate to, but that definitely comes through with her. I mean, that's what I get from it, you know. No, I think she's, yeah, that's good stuff. I mean, I'm like, as you're reading, I'm like, because I was trying to, like, read along and, you know, so,
yeah. Well, she's like, I think you make a very good point, and, like, what I really enjoy about her work is, like, the amount of cynicism that is chalked into it. It seems like it almost makes her, I love the fact that she, it's almost like she's laughing. A lot of times,
well, yeah, you know, there are some times where you're, you know, there's, it, I think it's almost like a smirking, you know, I don't know about laughing, but it's smirking. I mean, that's the tone.
Smirk.
Yeah. And even when she reads her work sometimes, you know, sometimes she does the videos and the audio and stuff, there's that tone, I think, there's some sarcasm and there's a little bit of there's some bitter in there.
Oh yeah.
And I think and I don't know if it's because I don't want to say it's the female thing or it's the circumstances thing, but I think for some of us women, you know, we have a lot of baggage that we're carrying around from way back. I mean, you know, and
well, I don't think
it comes
it,
out,
yeah.
It bubbles out.
I don't think that, well, I mean, like you're talking about, like, women do have, do face a lot of different issues than men do. I don't know, I don't know if I would say that they have a lot of different baggage than what men do. I think we all as human beings deal with a lot of stuff. However, I will say that I will say that it is very encouraging for me whenever I see female writers putting out material such as that, because it's raw, it's gritty, it's real, it's common things that, you know, people deal with it that they're not always comfortable in saying. And that's what poetry should be about. It should be about the things that we're not comfortable saying. It shouldn't be about what we are comfortable saying.
Yeah, and I think that the maybe the female perspective that I guess I'm referring to is that women are very often conditioned to hide imperfections, hide who we are, hide our flaws, you know, put makeup over things, we're really trained to, you know, not to say that we have to be perfect, but I think there's an expectation that you owe it to other people to hide your ugly from them, you know? That people are entitled to see you, you know, the way they expect to see you. You know, in a lot of cases, people expect to see women as hot, as, you know, available, as, you know, whether it's mother, homemaker, or whatever your role in situation. But, you know, I think that at the same time, there's an expectation that, you know, women are very judged by their looks, you know, and it's there's just a whole bunch of stuff, you
yeah.
know, that I'm not saying men don't deal with. I don't want to make it a sexist issue, but, you know, I read a lot of things. You know, there was something actually that she had earlier, I think, that Michelle put on the podcast where, you know, she's sort of, you know, reading something about what it's like to be a teenage girl and
yeah.
being very unhappy with what you see and, you know, not quite envy toward other girls, but, you know, sort of kind of looking at yourself and saying, you know, yeah, well, you know, why do I suck? You know, like, you know, and I mean, damn, but doesn't that like really resonate with so many of us that have had that experience of, you know, kind of sitting there and feeling like you're, you know, I'm not saying she is, but, you know, that sense of being like the ugliest in the room, you know, and surrounded by people that are, you know, dressed up and got it together and you don't.
And I
do relate to that because I've never had it together. I've never been. I joke around. I dress like Brian Fugit half the time. I mean, I don't have it together. And so it's there's awe about some of these women, you know.
Mm-hmm. And that's perfect the type women. Of in all honesty, that's the type of work we like to encourage at the Meth Lab. I'll give you guys actually another example of what you're talking about here, and this is the type of female work that I liked that I was talking about when it's stuff that you're not really comfortable in saying, but it's something that really is provoking. And this is actually a poem from Miss Eden Sharon, and this is published on January 27th of 2011. The poem is called "The Preacher." The preacher, with words like fists landing blow after blow as he yanked up her skirt. When he came, he would curse, then call on God, dismount, and call her Eve. And that's it. There you go. I think that's more like when I read that poem, and I don't know how you would interpret it, but when I read that poem, immediately my mind goes to, I don't know, it seems like it's not a situation where it's like a mutual sexual attraction. I don't think. In all honesty, whatever I got from that poem is more of a tale of, I don't know, maybe it's like something about molestation, or maybe it's a situation about rape or what have you, but I don't find that is a comfortable scenario. And that's what really attracted me to this poem, is it made me feel very uncomfortable in my own skin after reading it. And I love that kind of stuff. Love it.
Yeah. When you say, I mean, you definitely have a certain... the material that you pick, you know, for the Meth Lab. I mean, obviously, you know, there's a certain honesty and candor. But, you know, I have to tell you, I'm just going to put this out there, you know, because it's sort of, to me, it's sort of like the elephant in the room with,
mm-hmm.
with your Meth Lab thing. I'm just going to put it out there. I honestly, you know what, I love Carl. I've talked to him for a long time, off and on. You know, he kind of disappears and returns. And, you know, I was a little bit confused by the piece that was up today. Well, not today, but, you know, it was... you know, I mean, I know there was another piece at Red Fez that it kind of reminded me of. Honestly, I'm a little bit, I don't know. You know, like I said, it's sort of like the elephant in the room because I thought there were some shots taken in there, and it surprised me. And I'm not trying to call him out on it because I understand and you understand, and I think most of the people that listen to this or will listen understand that is Carl. Carl is, you know, that's the way he is. I mean,
right.
You know, he's an unapologetic, you know, asshole. I mean,
yeah,
he'll say, yeah. He's like, yeah, that's what you get. That's what I am. And I don't pretend otherwise. You know, he's very honest about that up front. And I do respect that. And I want to say that I respect that because it's actually a pretty cool thing about him. But the particular piece, I was kind of like scratching my head like, you know, what the hell?
You know what? When I actually mulled over that piece for a good month and a half before I actually went ahead and gave him the go on it. I actually had my reservations about putting that one up. to be honest with you. And I will admit this on the air. I did have my reservations about putting that particular piece up because I felt, as you said, that maybe parts of it were, well, let's go ahead and say it. Parts of it are taking shots, probably. I'm not even going to lie. Like, parts of it are taking shots. But that being said, as you mentioned, I know Carl Kowalski, and I know how he's dealt with certain people, and I know how he's talked to certain people, and I know how he, like, feels about certain people. A lot of times what Carl Kowalski will do is he will pick at the people that he loves the most and that he enjoys the company of. He will pick at them incessantly, and he will pick at the most – and that's what he does. He looks for your biggest flaws sometimes in order to show you that, hey, I pay attention to you, and I read you, and I know what's going on with you. And I
mean, is that what it is? I mean, honestly, I don't. I'm sort of taking your word for it on that because I don't know. I don't claim to be an expert on the guy.
I can't claim to know what Carl Kowalski's motivations were for that particular piece. I'm telling you, like, why I thought it was appropriate was because I knew Carl Kowalski. I know that the stuff that he said in here, he would say to these people's faces. That's just, and he has said that kind of stuff to these people's faces. Like, that's what made me feel comfortable about it was is that he's already said this thing. But at the end, and this is what really, really tied it together for me, is at the end, he finishes the piece with completely fictional, of course. And that is, that's the saving grace, I think, for the piece itself, is because he's actually going out on a limb and he's saying, like, guys, don't take this too seriously. I think that's what he's not saying.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? I buy that, but it sort of got. You know why I buy it and I don't. And I'll just say that there are parts where I'm kind of like, you know, this doesn't even really have much to do with the story here, taken from just trying to be objective mm-hmm. because, you know, he's, you know, I dig him. I, you know, full disclosure, I do.
I think I like the guy. Yeah, I think the main focus of the piece, I think, is his ruination in the small press world. I think that's the main focus of it, is how he's, like, completely comfortable at this point in his life, destroying every bit of, respect that he's built in the community or what have you.
You know, crash and burn, you know.
And to be honest with you,
sort of like lest you think that you'll be spared as pouring the gasoline, you know, yep. I'm going to make sure I get your toes. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. I'm trying to understand.
Like that, Lynn. Like, you got to be able to, and I'm the type of, I feel like this, like, anymore, man. Like, I feel like if I get to the point where I'm going to take this stuff too seriously, like, I got to be able to, like, just drop it or burn it or, like, just walk away from it, you know, like, and that's what I enjoy about people like Carl Kowalski and Frank Reardon and, you know, Paul Corner Roberts, guys like that, man. It's like, they don't take themselves so seriously to where they, like, put so much stock into, like, what people think about them and, like, what people, like, get from their writing that they let it, like, completely cloud any sort of, like, humor in themselves or any sort of humanity in themselves. Because in all honesty, if you guys are, like, if people are that caught up on, like, who's saying what about who, like, I mean, come on, somebody read, Nuwamba Flamingo wrote a story about me fucking a goat, and I still talk to the guy, you know what I mean, like, I still talk to this guy, like, you can't take yourself too fucking seriously in this shit, and if you do...
Isn't there a time where something is kind of like over the top? It's sort of known to be, you know. I mean, I'm not saying it's absurd, but I wouldn't be offended by a story like that either if it were about me, because it's sort of like, yeah, okay, ha, you know, it's, you know, fucking a goat, but
no,
you know,
I think
that when you start sort of getting into, like, I don't know. There were a couple of jabs at like, you know, integrity there. I don't know if you saw it that way.
I don't know.
You didn't.
More along the lines of him illustrating how much of an asshole he could be. I think. That's my opinion. I think he was basically illustrating the Polish hammer. He's illustrating that he is an asshole.
No, I don't know. Like I said, it wasn't. I'm not trying to draw conclusions. I'm sort of just saying that I sort of scratched my head and said, well, I don't know. Yeah. This is kind of, and not to say that there weren't parts that were funny. It just, there were some parts where I was like, it seemed gratuitous, is what I'm saying. There were parts that were sort of like, well, what does this really have to do with, you know,
well,
with what's going on
it's
here?
Interesting because, you know, we, a couple months ago, we had Michelle McDonald's piece up about Todd Moore.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I took, like, we caught some feedback from that as well. And, you know, and basically what Michelle was saying was that she wasn't saying that she didn't appreciate Todd Moore's work or his, or what he had done for the community. She did not appreciate people treating him like Tupac's fucking hologram or some shit. You know what I mean? Like, that's where she was at. And, that's what I appreciated about that particular piece, and that's why I published it, was because I thought that it had merit. It went beyond Todd Moore and people, you know, that liked him. It went beyond that. It went to the point of where it made the reader examine idol worship of sorts. And
right,
how,
and I do agree with you there, and I do think that that's, you know, I agree with what you're saying about her piece. And I'm not saying that his is without merit. I wouldn't say that about Carl.
No,
I would,
no,
you know, I'm not like that. You know, I think that if he were here right now on the line, he would say, "Ah, she digs me." You know,
let me see.
But
I'm going to look at
the. What do you think the merit was in some of the, like, the book sale stuff?
I think it was the merit in this was, like, what we're talking about is, like, how poets take themselves too seriously and how they.
Okay. No. I mean, that's fair enough. That's fair enough. Because I think that, you know, and I agree, it does sort of make me, you know, laugh a little bit when people talk about book sales and, you know, that kind of thing, too. It's sort of like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't realize I had, you know, Dan Brown here, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
I get that part. I figured since, you know, you posted it and, you know, I was just trying to, you know, like,
you know,
make
like,
sense of it.
I like the people that he might be alluding to, and I've read some of the people that he's alluding to in that one. I've got no issues with them whatsoever. Like, I have no issues with them whatsoever, and I hope that they understand that. And I hope that they read this piece and they go and they take a look at themselves and they're like, well, you know, I could get really pissed about this, or I could just blow it off as it being Carl fucking Kowalski, the Polish Hammer, at it again. And in all honesty, if Carl Kowalski wrote something like this about me, like, I invite you, Carl Kowalski, to, like, pick on me all you want, bro, because I will find it flattering. I don't care. I've had people write pieces about me plenty of times, and it's not always been flattering. The important thing is that you can either, A, chalk it up to a funny joke and everybody gets a laugh and everybody moves on, or B, you can chalk it up to them being a personal attack and get all serious and butthurt over it. And I just don't think that we have time to get butthurt over anything at this point, Lynn. I mean, we barely got any time left to live, so.
No, that's true. I mean,
I appreciate you bringing that up. It's a good. It is the elephant in the room, and I appreciate you bringing it up. And I like discussing. And I did want to say that we have about 90 seconds left of the show, so I will go ahead and take the time to announce that yes, next week, May 11th, when it was originally scheduled, there will be the Meth Lab Radio with Nuambo Flamingo. I promise that Nuambo Flamingo will appear this time, even if I have to do the voice myself. So you guys can definitely return for that. Lynn, really appreciate you hanging out with me in the Meth Lab this evening. I know that it's like 2 a.m. there. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm going to get up in, what, a couple hours. It's all good.
Well, I appreciate you hanging out with us, Lynn, welcome in the Meth Lab. So.
No, I appreciate you doing the show, and, you know, hey, we'll be listening next week.
Definitely do that. Everybody, I appreciate you coming by. Be sure to check out Well, look, we got lots of things going on. We got Red Fez Radio actually coming up this Friday. You guys can actually check that out. Go to www.redfez.net and you can click on the radio tab. It'll actually pull up all the information for Literary Underground shows as well as Red Fez Radio shows. So it's a great big family over there. And then, of course, Monday, please be sure to return to Literary Underground for another edition of your mother's medicine cabinet poetry series featuring none other than Frank Reardon, who's also been featured in the Meth Lab. So great stuff going on there. And then after that, of course, you know, there's that little show called Draconian Vampire Tunnel. It's closed for repairs. Some douchebag named Frankie Metro is hosting that one on Tuesday at 10 p.m. Western Standard Time, 11 p.m. Mountain, 12 a.m. Central Standard Time, and 1 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. So definitely come back for that. I think that's about it for the evening. And I do appreciate everybody calling in, and be sure to go by the Meth Lab. Check that out. All that great stuff there. Peace, love, meth. Nah, fuck the peace, fuck the love. Just give me the meth. Catch you guys next week. Later.